Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your co-host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Felipe Leon. Felipe, what's going on, brother? How you doing? How's Tijuana?
Good, good. Everything's good. Everything's pretty calm over here, and we're sitting down, and we're ready to do the latest edition of Leaving in the Ring here on the Leaving in the Ring Network. How you doing?
Hey, good. Hey, man, I got to give you some major props, dude. The hardest working boxing podcaster out there. I mean, you're going back from San Diego to Tijuana. You're doing podcasts in San Diego, going all the way back to Tijuana. I saw that thing you did with the Spanish podcast that you do, where you guys did a commentary for the Adrian Broner and Adrian Granados fight. Man, that was something. I enjoyed it. I didn't understand shit you guys were saying, but I enjoyed it.
We're talking too fast for you, and we weren't talking about tacos or carne asada, so I know that.
It didn't sound like an order. It didn't sound like a roast coast order at all.
You could just call me the Juan Cafe of the boxing podcast, or the James Brown of boxing podcast. That's James Brown in Spanish.
Oh man! Well, we got a lot of stuff here to talk about here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Really quick, we got to plug in our Patreon. If you haven't pledged with us just yet, do so today or tomorrow. We're only asking for a dollar. I mean, it can go all the way up to $25 if you're balling, if you're rolling through. You know what I mean? With Rolls Royce and stuff like that. Pretty sure you can afford the $25. But we're not asking.
Hey, touching on that, you did post a special the boxing spotlight, which I thought was really good. That was special to Patreon, and then it actually released later on to the rest of the audience, right? But if you guys catch that, it's really good. It's David giving his opinion about a couple of subjects that he got emails on, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've been kind of throwing it up, you know, up there, what ideas that you know, we want to do for the network, and especially for people that are pledging with us. You know, we want to give them some brand new content. Even though we got the next round and Leaving the Ring and the 2-minute round, you know, I mean, if you're going to pay for something, you want to have something 24/7, right, on the network. So mm-hmm. That's what we're trying to produce, you know. Hopefully we get Around the Ring ready to go by the end of this month. It's just hard getting everybody's schedule on point to be, you know, be at the same time, in sync at the same time, so we could do that show. But I got a couple of good guests that are going to be on the first segment, so that should be pretty exciting. But anyways, hey, let's get down to it. We got a lot of stuff to talk about on a rundown of the week here in boxing. We got predictions. We got results. We got the bad, the good, and the ugly. We also have the douchebag of the week in boxing. So why don't you go ahead and run it up really quick, Felipe? What do we got on that rundown?
All right, let's get started with a quick rundown of this past weekend's results, in case you guys weren't able to catch the fights this weekend or catch the next round, which also spoke about these fights. We're just going to give you the quick results really, really fast here. At the Cinta Center in Cincinnati, Ohio, Adrian Broner, the problem, came back from a little bit of a hiatus. He hadn't fought since April of last year, and he went life and death with Chicago's Adrian Granados in a welterweight 10-rounder broadcast live on Showtime. Obviously, we all knew that this fight was originally scheduled at 143 pounds, but a couple of weeks before this past Saturday, Broner's people called Granados and told them they were going to raise the weight limit to 147 pounds, the welterweight limit, and obviously they offered Granados a little bit more money for his trouble. Broner's quick buy with the split decision with scores of 97-93 and 96-94, while the third judge saw it for Granados with a 97-93. In the semi-main event of the same night, Lamont Peterson came back from even a longer layoff than Adrian Broner. He had not fought since October of 2015. He came back to capture the WBA welterweight quote-unquote regular title over David Avanesian with an impressive unanimous decision. Scores there were 116-112 two times, and 115-113. David, you gave a pretty good account of your opinion of the whole Broner-Granados fight, but why don't you let us know a little bit of what you saw in that fight?
Well, I tell you what, off of the Mr. Zima, Steve Kim, Twitter account, he tweeted out that if, you know, for those who care, Broner and Granados did 779,000 viewers, peaked at 859, highest numbers in 2 years for Showtime. So that kind of tells you that Broner still brings that little bit of a buzz. And if with the right opponent across from him, right, at the turnbuckle, he's gonna turn in some numbers. People are going to show up. I mean, it looked a little empty, you know, televised-wise, when, you know, you saw some empty seats and all that, but it looked like everybody turned up for the Showtime viewing. So that's a good thing there. I mean, I'm pretty sure Showtime is pretty happy with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, of course. You know, Showtime is really putting on a great schedule this year, 2017. I mean, it kind of went a little dark at the end of 2016 or the second half of 2016. But, you know,
a little
really
dark. I mean, there
really
was pitch black dark. Man.
Yeah. You know, but now they're really bringing in 2017. I mean, they're the ones that gave us so far this year. They gave us, well, not so much. Well, yeah, it was them. It was on Showtime, right? Santa Cruz, Frampton. It was on Showtime.
Yes.
They gave us James DeGale against Badu Jack. They gave us the Santa Cruz, Frampton rematch. And now they're giving us this fight card, which, you know, Broner and Granados, I mean, yeah, he went life to death. You know, he shouldn't have. If Broner is a four-time divisional champion in Granados, you know, the biggest fight and the biggest name he had been in was Amir Imam. And for him to be facing Broner at this stage and making it such a fight, you know, says something about Broner and his skill level or his commitment to the sport. Obviously, like everybody has mentioned, you know, what would Kell Brook or Errol Spence or Keith Thurman or Danny Garcia have done with Granados at this point. But forgetting all that, was it an entertaining fight? I think it was an entertaining fight.
Oh,
were you entertained?
Sure. I was definitely entertained. I mean, here's the thing. We knew that Granados was going to come and fight. We knew that he was going to throw flurries. We knew that he was going to come forward. We knew the pressure was going to be him going after the stockier Adrian Broner, you know. There's a couple of things that I think that I think he fell short on. One is, you know, the little bit of the showboating. I don't know about you, Felipe, but I didn't care for it. You know, Adrian Granados, you're in hostile territory. It should have been all business. You know, he was sticking out his tongue. He was waving. He was kind of, you know, goofing around at certain points. And to me, it was like you weren't really trying to, even though I don't think you would have won over those judges, because I think the judges, regardless, were going to go, you know, swing towards Broner, right? But but to me, it was a point where you should have kept it business. You know what I mean? Should have stayed in business. The other thing that I think that he fell short on was bro, how many times are you going to go forward and just fall into your punches where you're going to allow Broner to hold you? You know what I mean? Like, he never went around, like, he never pivoted around Broner to try to get, you know, open up some shots there. He just kept doing the same thing over and over, which led for Broner in those later rounds to start countering and be the sharp shooter. He never adjusted. His corner never told him, hey, stop falling into your punches, fight a little smarter. He just didn't do any of that stuff, and I think that's what cost him the fight. Because, yeah, was it life and death for Adrian Broner? It could have been death completely if Adrian Granados would have fought a little bit more discipline, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It would have been. He could have probably beaten Broner, you know, if he would have fought more discipline. I mean, to a certain extent, I was scoring the fight, and I had a 96-94 for Broner at the end, but. For at certain points, I had Granados up because I really liked the way that he was switching the momentum. I mean, one round, Broner was the aggressor, and he was the one that was moving forward. And the other round was Granados actually pushing Broner back into the ropes, but he didn't do it consistently. He allowed Broner to come back into that fight. And it just, I think it just had, as far as the showboating, I think it was nervous energy. I mean, you know, coming from that Amir Imam win and then, you know, to be headlining a Showtime main event in an arena the size of the Cintas Center in Cincinnati. I mean, it's nervous energy, I believe. And, you know, and you're trying to get rid of it, and you're in a place where you've never been before in an event at a level that you've never been before. So, you know, I think it has something to do with that. The other thing is –
it doesn't rub you wrong, though. I mean, let me ask you, Felipe, and honestly, doesn't that – if you're going out – if you live in Broner's territory and you go out to that fight and you see the guy, the challenger, doing a little bit of that showboating, doesn't that kind of turn you off? Doesn't it make you go like, man, this guy's already acting like he really won? Fight's not even over yet.
It's part of the show. I mean, and if you're from Cincinnati and you've seen Broner fight, it's, you know, par for the course. I mean, it's basically Broner light. So I don't think that that would make much a difference to me, quite honestly. As far as the skill level, I mean,
I guess I'm old school. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm an old school Mexicano that likes my fighters to go out and just handle their business. I mean, if you're going to showboat after. I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I like Adrian Granados. I'd like to see the kid get back into the ring. Not at 147, though. I'd like to see him come back at 140. I think he's just a far more, you know, he's going to be far
effective.
More hard. Yeah, he's more effective. He's going to be hard to handle at 140. 147, you know, they're treading in those waters that you're just going to sink getting in with any of the other guys that have been at 147 for some time, you know.
Well,
let me tell you this. Hey, let me ask you this, though. Wouldn't Granados and a Bradley fight be fun to watch?
No.
I'd love. Why not? What do you mean, though?
You just said it. They have the same style. They throw their punches and they fall into their opponent. You're basically describing Timothy Bradley.
I don't know, man. I think that'd be a fun fight. You know, I mean, Timothy's a little bit more disciplined in terms of smothering himself. I think that Timothy would create that distance and open up and land some pretty good shots, and I think it would make that kid even work a little bit harder. I don't think it should happen. If it was to happen, I would like to see it going at 140. I think it's that's both of their best.
Wouldn't you rather see Broner against Timothy Bradley?
To me that's more of a one-sided fight. I give it to Timothy Bradley. You know, I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know what I think right now about Broner at this moment. Like, where does he go from here? You know,
I just don't think, I hope he goes to junior welterweight, because I don't think he should stay at welterweight. I mean, obviously, it's proven that this is not his weight class. I mean, the two losses that he has have come at this weight class, although he didn't weigh as heavy as 147. He was more like the 144, 143, 145
right.
range. But I mean, he just doesn't have it. I mean, maybe his quickness is not the same at 147. His punching power is not the same at 147. He just doesn't have it at 147 to be competitive with the Danny Garcias and the Petersons and that he's done.
Right. No,
yeah,
I know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's just almost like this guy's set up for disaster with the Al Haymon model. You know, I don't know what their plan is to do with. Obviously, they're gonna try to make as much money off of the kid's name and stuff. But I tell you what, Lamont Peterson, holy shit. Going in with David Avanesian.
Just say David.
It's not Avanesian. How did you say it earlier? Avanesian.
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 Let's call.
Screw that one up. Okay.
Let's call Vanis and see how you pronounce it.
Let's call Von. That's if he's going to answer. I think he's he only responds back on Twitter, bro.
Oh,
but Lamont Peterson, hey, regardless of the shorts, his performance was on. It was just it was great to see him get back in there and do his thing. You know, we've seen two sides of Lamont Peterson. We've seen the boxer. Now we've seen the boxer puncher. You know, I don't, even though he wasn't close of knocking out David, but at one point, I mean, you just every time he landed those heavy shots. I wondered myself, man, how is David able to walk through him? I mean, what a chin does that guy have? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Lamont was landing some hellacious shots on this kid. And you know what? And you know that you saw a little bit of the ring rust at the beginning, but you didn't see a, I didn't see a guy that, that had not been in the ring for, you know, the better half of, you know, nearly a year and a half. If, you know, I just didn't see that. I mean,
right.
I was quite impressed with Lamont Peterson to a certain point where I had to kind of like pull the reins and pump the brakes a little bit because
right.
I said, okay, well, he looks great, but how good is this Avanesian? I mean, a guy that, you know, his biggest name was against a way, way over the hill, Shane Mosley. So how good is this David Avanesian? And is he making Lamont Peterson look good? So I think it's a little bit of both, but I really believe that Peterson has become a player in the welterweight division now that he has his WBA title. And I want to see him against the winner, Keith Thurman.
Well,
and Danny Garcia, obviously he's faced Danny Garcia already, but that was a controversial
right.
decision. So I believe he has earned the rematch.
Oh, if he definitely earned that rematch. You know,
Garcia beat Thurman, obviously.
And also, you got to give the matchmaker props because David Avanesian was definitely the right guy for Lamont Peterson to showcase against. He was tough,
yeah.
durable, come forward, took a good shot, never stopped trying.
Couldn't close the ring off, though, so that helped Peterson.
Yeah, couldn't cut that ring off. And but I tell you what, ring rust, I don't know, ring rust, or if it was just nerves that he had to shake off. Because once they were shook off,
mm-hmm.
I think it was after the third, the fourth round, you saw him going back to the corner, talking to Barry Hunter, and he started smiling. You really just kind of got that sense that this kid just loves it. You know what I mean?
You know, you
love
kinda,
getting
you
in there.
And you kind of forget how good he is. I mean, if you remember, and I'm sure
right?
you do, when these guys were coming up, you know, when him and his brother Anthony were coming up, I mean, they were, you know, really good prospects. And, you know, and the whole story behind them being homeless and their trainer. What's the guy's name? It's not what's the guy's name?
Barry Hunter.
Barry Hunter, you know, picking them up and you know, making them in the men that they are and the fighters that they are. You know, it was a really good story. And then Peterson kind of hit some roadblocks there. I mean, he got knocked, you know, unconscious by Lucas Matisse. And then he had that, you know, he had that weird fight with Amir Khan and then that positive result afterwards. And then he had that controversial loss to Danny Garcia and then the long layoff. And you kind of forget how good these two guys are, you know. And Peterson, to me, honestly, I really like his style. I mean, he's quick. He's athletic. He uses his jab the way you're supposed to gauge distance and also to set up his other punches and his combinations. His uppercuts and his hooks are right on point. I mean, I really like his style. So, you know, I really want to see him against the best at welterweight because I think he could hang in there with them.
I mean, there's no question about whether he can hang in with them at all. The question is this. This is the question. Is he going to be shelved again? Is PBC going to put him on the shelf, only allow him to have this one fight? Because we've seen the way they work. Their train of thought of moving their fighters is completely different from us fight fans, right? I mean, you see one guy get a really good, significant win, and then you got some high hopes for the guy, and you're just like, okay, shit, this guy can now be put in the mix of all the other welterweights out there, and we can really make some fun fights. But dude, PBC has been known to kill a wet dream.
Yeah, you know, and you're absolutely right, you know, but we'll see. I mean, he's a WBA champ now, so he wasn't a champion before when he had this hiatus.
He's a regular.
I mean,
He's a regular.
Yeah, he's a regular champ. I mean, I at this point, but then at this point, you know, if Keith Thurman or Danny Garcia end up winning that title, which they're going to fight for on March 4th, which is the Super WBA welterweight title, then at one point or another, you know, Lamont Peterson can ask for the opportunity to...
He can ask for it. I don't think he'll get it, though. I mean, look, if whoever wins between Thurman and Garcia, I think it's safe to say, Felipe, that they're gonna start looking at maybe asking for the Manny Pacquiao fight. That's a big money fight for them. You know, Manny's on the way out. Why not? Why not? You know, because the fact that Al Haymon, which is, you know, as of right now, it's just, you know, bullshit until there's something actually set in place between them two to make a fight with each other. But Al Heyman is, you know, preaching that, hey, he's willing to work with any promoter, Golden Boy, to which they have. They've worked with Golden Boy, but with, you know, but more so that they were willing to work with Top Rank. I think that's the route that they that Danny Garcia or Keith Thurman are looking at to move. You know, I mean, why not? Why not? You know, I think every fighter's dream is to go to that pay-per-view platform. They're ready for it. They've been ready for it.
Well, of course, the holy grail at the welterweight division is Manny Pacquiao. I mean, that's the guy that you're going to make the most money with facing, and that's why everybody has asked to fight him, from Kell Brook to Amir Khan to David Broner, I mean, to Adrian Broner, who is also vying for a shot at Manny Pacquiao after losing, after winning this last fight on Saturday night. You know, but as you just mentioned, you know, the politics of the sport are there with Al Heyman and Top Rank and all that. You know, Lamont Peterson being under the banner of Al Heyman, as the same as Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia. You know, it's also, I mean, I don't think, I don't know how much leverage Showtime has and Steven Espinosa in asking for that fight and asking Al Heyman to make that fight sometime this year. Who knows? I mean, at this point, who dictates to who? Does Steven Espinosa dictate to Al Heyman, or does Al Heyman dictate to Steven Espinosa? I think we all know the answer to that one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. You know, because the thing is, the biggest fight right now for this year is in the welterweight, in the welterweight division, is Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman. But, and the business aspect of the world for any promoter is, what is next after that? What's bigger? You know, what's bigger? If Floyd is still flirting with the fact that they want to, he wants to, you know, come back, and he's saying it's got to make sense. And if the numbers are just extraordinarily good, Felipe, why wouldn't it make sense for Floyd to try to face the winner of Thurman and Garcia? I mean, I don't want to see the guy come back, but if there is no Manny Pacquiao, if there's no severed between Top Rank and Al Heyman, then the only other route is to continue trying to find something that's going to entice, intrigue Floyd Mayweather to get up, come out of retirement to face one of the welterweights. If not, we're going to see recycle fights with in the welterweight division in the PBC world, right?
I don't think
Lamont Peterson, Amir Khan, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't think that that Keith Thurman, or the winner Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia, with this one fight, is going to generate such a buzz to entice Floyd Mayweather Jr. from coming back from his retirement. You know, I think that he's looking for big, big, major paydays, and he believes that major payday is with Conor McGregor. I mean, I don't really even want to talk about it. Like you said on your boxing spotlight, you know, real boxing fans don't even want to talk about this fight, you know. But I don't think that Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia generate that kind of paycheck for Floyd Mayweather that he's going to put himself at risk, because it would be a bigger risk fight to face a Keith Thurman or a Danny Garcia than a Conor McGregor, and Conor McGregor is going to bring him more money. So I don't feel that they've been promoting the fight that well either for it to make big numbers on CBS anyways. Like what we had talked about a couple of shows ago, that they didn't provide anything. You know, they didn't do a 24/7 or a Showtime type of show where they could broadcast it on Showtime or on CBS to kind of tell the story of these two guys. They haven't done any of that. So,
no.
You know, I don't think they're going to generate. I mean, yeah, it's going to get good numbers, but it's not going to be like $100 million purse numbers for Floyd Mayweather. It's not going to do that.
No. Before we keep moving on our rundown, let's pass in some fight fans really quick, man. And then right after that, we're going to talk about the Kardashians of boxing, the catchweight kings, Canelo and Chavez. A couple things we got to mention about those guys. Let's go with area code 812. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, good evening, Dave and Felipe. How you doing, man? This is Joe.
Hey, Joe,
what's
how
up,
you doing?
Brother? How you doing, man?
How you doing, man? Pretty good, man. Good, pretty good. Hey, just wanted to touch on some things. I talked to Monday, Dave, about just going back with Broner. And I'm just, you know, just thinking about I don't know when the last time he really was spectacular. Like, I'm trying to think back of his fights of, like, I don't know what's left for him. Like honestly, if he moves up to 147, I mean, the guy made $1 million against Granado. So that just shows me that they still have high hopes, and he's really protected in PBC. I just don't see him fighting a top five welterweight going forward. I mean, I don't know who it is. who he would fight against, who they would even, you know, chance him against.
I don't know either. That's the question. I mean, do you put him in with Lamont Peterson, who just looked, I mean, the guy just looked like he's back on point. You know, as we mentioned, the ring rust was there, but it was shook off after 3-4 rounds, and then he was just fluent with his punches. You don't put him in with Broner, you know? Go ahead.
I think he's going to keep going up against gatekeepers. Like, honestly, I could see him against Collazo. Not against Collazo. I like him, but, you know, I just don't see him. I don't think they're going to – I think with Lamont, I heard that they're real close. You know, they're real –
Well, let me ask you,
that,
do you think Collazo beats him? Let me ask you this. Do you think Collazo beats him? I mean, Collazo has been a gatekeeper, but, dude, he's been bringing that power with that gate.
I think it's going to be the same thing like what we saw Saturday night, where the fans at home and a lot of fans in the crowd are going to think Collazo beats him. But at the end of the day – You know how sometimes the politics work. I think Broner
right.
will edge out a decision. You know, but I mean, you know, like I said, like Steve always says, man, he's all sizzle and no steak. You know, so
right.
I was just a little disappointed because I have had high hopes for him, and I think I fell for the trap of really falling for his personality. You know, the outbreaks and just the show. You know his personality is his first character, the AB character.
Right.
But when you translate it into the actual skills, it's like, damn, what the hell am I? Why do I even like this guy? You know, but anyway, yeah.
Right.
Going on, I want to ask a question for Felipe. I know you guys are going to get in on the Chavez, but Felipe, were you able to attend the weigh-in in Mexico City Monday, or were you here in San Diego?
No. I'm in Tijuana, so I'm like...
Not the weigh-in, I'm sorry, the press conference.
Yeah, the press conference? No, I'm in Tijuana, so I'm about a 3.5-hour flight from there. So, no, I was not able to attend, and I will be attending the fight, and I will be attending the weigh-in, and we'll be doing something special from over there here on the Leaving in the Ring Network. We won't announce it just yet, but keep in tune. But go ahead with your question.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Felipe. I know you got a show in Spanish. I don't understand Spanish, man, so I won't tune in. But you're around a lot of the Mexican culture. If you walk in the Mexican barbershop, or if you just in a walking around neighborhood, and you start bringing up boxing, who are the hardcore Mexican boxing fans rooting for? Are they backing Chavez Jr.? Or are they kind of just saying Canelo's gonna, you know, go in there and take him out?
You know what? It's honestly a toss up. You know, a lot of people, you know, they're just like what we say. You know, the people that know about boxing say the same things we do. You know, Canelo is, you know, it is who he is, and his career has been taken in a certain way, and he's faced the right fighters at the right time to get to where he's at. Whereas with Chavez Jr., the criticism is, you know, he only got to where he's at because he's his father's son, and his discipline is, you know, horrible, and the drug use and all that stuff, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, each one has their fan base, but a lot of the hardcore fans, what I've seen, they're leaning towards Chavez Jr. because of the size and because of the father. You know, they have the father. He's like, I don't know if you ever had a chance to go on Netflix and watch these documentaries that they have on Diego Maradona, you know, the soccer player from Argentina.
Yes.
If you ever watch those documentaries and you know the story of Diego Maradona, I mean, he's practically God in Argentina. I mean, the guy can do no wrong in Argentina. And Chavez Sr., he's like nearly at that level in Mexico. I mean, the guy can say anything. And he does say practically anything on Mexican TV when he's
broadcasting
at people level.
Yeah, he could say anything even here in the States in an all-Mexican neighborhood. You know
what
I mean?
You know?
it's crazy.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, a lot of people, you know, if they had to put their hand on the fire and choose a fighter that they're going to cheer for, it's probably Chavez Jr., but a lot of people obviously are leading towards Canelo because, you know, the activity and you know, the fact that he's had better activity and he's looked better in the last, you know, two years or whatever the case may be. But I think the hardcore fans, just because of that tie-in with the dad, they might be leaning with Junior on this one, because they just think the whole legacy and the whole, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, the royalty, the boxing royalty that Chavez Sr. and Chavez Jr. represent, you know, it's something that counts here.
Okay, great. And Dave, you were talking about Thurman Garcia, and I know you guys said they didn't have the All Access, but they do have, and it's not, you got to go on the Showtime Facebook or Showtime YouTube page and watch the reveal. They had it for Broner and Granados, which was really, really good. But it's about 8 minutes long, 10 minutes long. They did Danny Garcia's yesterday, and it's just a one-on-one interview with Danny. And that's the first time. I'm a big Keith Thurman fan, you know. But sometimes, you know, I like to hear the stories of these fighters. And for the first time, I got to hear Danny's past. Like, I never really knew nothing about his childhood, so he got kind of emotional in his series, in his interview with Mark Kriegel, and it was really good, man. So I'm sure they're going to do Thurman's. But I really did wish that they would do one on TV just to hype it up a little bit. But, I know it's gonna blow. I think it'll break Thurman Porter's record as far as CBS viewings, and it's probably going to be the highest gate at the Barclays. But, man, that's going to be a big – we got a lot of big fights to talk about, man.
Right.
But
well,
that's kind of really – go ahead.
I think here's the thing that some of us can't really speak on, because we're not there in that
mm-hmm.
business room with Al Haymon. But this is my theory, okay, is there would have been something, a show to lead up to it, a 24/7 type of show. But I think that money got slim and they
mm-hmm.
put it towards where it really matters, which is, you know, giving the money to fighters and securing these dates, right? Whereas everything else, promotion-wise, which we've seen with PBC, they've just never been big on pushing the fight. They've kind of just kind of – they're almost like that – what is it? What's that one movie, man? Wayne's World, right? Where, you know, hey, just set the concert and they will come. They will come. That's just pretty much how they do everything. So – I think that's the reason why we're not seeing any really promotional push or any type of, show that's going to entice people, bring them in. They're the outsiders to the sport of boxing. But anyway, Joe, do you got anything else for us, brother? Hey, what's your prediction for Wilder in Washington, man?
Yeah, I'll go real quick. Yeah, man, I think Wilder's going to just take him out between four rounds or less, and in between Hurd and Harrison, I'm hoping, everybody's hyping it up like it's going to be a great, great fight. But I just hope it's not I'm hoping for it. I think Hurd's going to walk away with that 154 belt. And after that, you know, we got some big fights coming up. I don't want to, you know, keep you guys long. But one more thing on the Thurman Garcia, I think their logic could be, hey, we don't got to sell it because it's not on pay-per-view. So maybe they're like, the fight sells itself. Whereas if that fight was on pay-per-view, they probably would at least do a couple shows of like an all-access, you know, because at least they'll get some of the like HBO to back them up on some of that, money to host the pay-per-view or whatnot.
Well,
but
I can tell you this. The best promotion you can do for any fight is to have good lineups of fights, because when you have a casual fan, and they've been doing this for the past 2 months,
mm-hmm.
there's no argument there that PBC has been stepping it up and their matchmaking. We've gotten some really good fights from Showtime to Fox Sports, et cetera, Bounce, whatever you tune in, that they're plugging in their shows, right? Then if you're a casual fan and you're at a bar and grill or you're at a buddy's house and somebody's watching the fights and you just happen to catch them, and you keep seeing this over and over, like, damn, hey, boxing's starting to make some noise here. That's the promotion that obviously is needed even more, to have somebody go, I want to check out what's going to happen between this guy Garcia and Thurman, because it's supposed to be the very first fight in a long time that CBS is going to feature that it's an actual unified title fight, welterweight fight. So that is, to me, the best
so
promotion
true,
that you can do. You know?
That's so true, because in Cincinnati – They showed highlight. They showed previews of that fight, I want to say at least four times on the big screen, you know. So they kept hyping it up in Cincinnati during like whatever breaks they had during the fights, you know. So I know it's going to do good, man. But, hey, you guys be well. I'm good talking with you guys, man. I'll be in touch next week, okay?
All right, buddy. Joe. Thanks again, man.
Yeah, take care. Okay.
All right, you too.
Let's go really quick with area code 423. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, fellas, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect, brother.
Hey, yeah, thanks for taking my call. This is Matt in Winston-Salem. How are you guys doing?
Good, bro. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. First-time caller. So, I've been listening to the show, and, it was a pretty good Saturday, I thought. Granados, he looks really promising, but, yeah, I think you're right. Like, the way he smothers his punches just again and again, like falling into Broner. Like, he needs, you know, the way, like, Ricky Hatton or even like a Brandon Rios does, like, where he's, you know, he's kind of a brawler coming in against a faster guy and then pivots around and whips a shot in. And I didn't really see that. And the ref was just content to let Broner just push off every time. You know, Broner was the guy who was, like, creating distance, just pushing and pushing and pushing. It was so frustrating to watch.
It's almost like a lost art, man. If you watch these guys, which I'm not knocking, Granados. I'm not knocking him. But when I sit back and watch this kid, and I'm like, do they ever practice their inside fighting? Do they ever understand that they could, if you're up close, you could still create distance? I mean, you could create openings if you just pivot out of the way. You want to stay in that pocket. You don't want to lose that up closeness that you have. But if you just pivot out of the way, you can open up so you can land a left uppercut or a body shot or something. And that's what I was waiting for from Granados. I was waiting for that from his team to say, you know. But it just seems like more and more I see these guys, the lost art of footwork, the lost art of pivoting, the lost art of trying to create openings is just not even there anymore. These guys don't seem to see it. And I don't understand why. And the tower coaches, that's what I call them, the guys are in the corner, right? Those tower coaches, they don't see it either. If I was these fighters and I saw that, how hard I made this fight, if I was Granados and I'm sitting back watching the replay and I go, damn, I made this fight a lot closer, why in the hell did not my team not tell me anything? Why didn't they not give me some added advice? Or give me something. I would fire those guys and give me some better tower coaches, man.
Yeah, he was he looks promising, and he put forth a really good effort, but it just wasn't quite there, and I do think Broner won the fight, just landing cleaner shots. But Granados, I mean, he's a 140-pounder, right? Like, wasn't the initial agreement just 142 for Broner's, like, catch weight because he's a little chubby? And then they were like, fuck it, we're going 147. So, I mean, if Granados is at 140, I mean, I think he can do a lot of good work. I mean, you think he's a good matchup for a lot of guys. I know a lot of good 140-pounders are, you know, with top rank
he's,
and not PBC,
yeah.
But
yeah, he's a force.
But,
he's a force, definitely a force at 140.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and,
but I think
what's your prediction for what? What are you gonna say?
Go ahead.
Hmm?
Well, I think at 140, I mean, he needs to be worked on. You know, I mean, right now he's an opponent. I mean, to be quite honest with you, I mean, not to take anything away from him, he's a good kid and he's a good fighter and he has more experience that his record shows. I mean, he was an alternate for the Mexican Olympic team at one point. But right now he's an opponent. I mean, he was brought in to fight Amir Imam to be a tough test, but not to beat him. So he beat
right.
him.
No.
And then he wins. He gets the opportunity to face Adrian Broner, which, quite honestly, guys, he wasn't brought in to beat him. You know, he was brought in to get on TV and make Adrian Broner look good. And, you know, he got on TV, but he didn't make Adrian Broner look good. He made him look bad. And, you know, I have a question if we're gonna see him again on Showtime or at this level of a fight event. Until he gets some wins. Until he gets some wins under his belt and he makes his record look a little bit more attractive.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely needs some work, and you know, this definitely is steepest test for sure. But I hope he rebounds, you know, and comes back and has a little bit more nuance in his game because I like him. But about Broner, real quick, it's weird, man. I mean, I despise the guy, just like everything about him. but I do look forward to his fights. It's almost like, you know how when you'd watch Floyd fight, every time you'd be like, all right, come on, maybe this will be the time he'll lose, and then he wins every freaking time. brothers like that, except he might lose. So you're like, all right, this is kind of exciting. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. It's like, okay, he might lose this fight. He's going to lose this fight. But and what kind of a fashion is he going to lose it? You know what I mean? I got what you
yeah.
say. That's hilarious. Hey, what's your pick for Wilder in Washington? What do you got?
Oh, Deontay. I've seen like clips of Washington. I've never seen his fights, but just from the record, I know Deontay is a little sloppy, but I think he's going to do enough to land a clean shot, and I think it's over in 4 or 5.
Well, there you go. You're on the record there, man.
Yeah, man. Well,
all right, brother. You guys, anything else for you, man?
No. Yeah. No, I'll let y'all go. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, man. Thanks for calling in, brother.
Later, y'all.
All right, so just to continue on, I mean, talking about this past weekend fights here, Felipe, I don't know if you had a chance to see on Friday on UNAMAS, Peru's Jonathan Marcelo, he pulled an upset. He ended up sending Jose Felix Jr. of Los Mochis Sinaloa to the canvas five times. Five times of winning the unanimous decision of 97-88, 96-90, and 95-90. I tell you what, out of all the fights, even though Lamont Peterson looked great and it was a fun, exciting fight against David Avanesian and Broner, which we knew that, you know, everything was on the upside for him to win that fight against Granados. This fight here was the what the hell was that, brother?
Sorry.
This fight here, to me, stole the whole weekend. This was the fight that had me standing up. This was the fight that had me going like, okay, at any moment, something major can happen here. Felix's jab was on point. The only problem was that, and Oscar De La Hoya was contested this, is to keep a strong pull. Man, it takes a lot of energy, and you're, you know, you just got to be in perfect shape to do that. And obviously,
well, he looked in perfect. I mean, perfect shape. The guy looked strong.
Yeah,
accurate.
He looked strong and everything. He was accurate. Let me say this. He was Jose Felix was doing everything right. The only thing that was going wrong was Marcelo on the other side. He keep coming forward. The guy just keep bullying himself way in, you know, past that jab, throwing the left hook. That left hook was just hellacious, dude. It was on point. I loved everything that the guy was doing. And I'm going to tell you what, the Inca Warrior, they call him the Inca Warrior. He almost is just wild. The way he was throwing his punches, the intensity, he reminded me of a lot of the other Inca Warrior. The one that passed away. What's his name?
Edwin Valero.
Edwin Valero. Valero. There were similarities, not in terms of power, but the intent. I don't know if you agree with that, but the way he was just throwing the shots, you could see that he could box, but he kind of opted out and said, "Nah, I'm not gonna box Jose Felix. I'm being successful with the wild punches of the left hook and the right overhand, over the top right hand."
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the guy was super aggressive and very accurate. I mean, he wasn't falling all over himself. I mean, any other fighter, when he drops his opponent five times, maybe at one of those times he would get ahead of himself and really try to finish him off. But he knew that he had somebody dangerous in front of him, even after dropping them two or three, four or five times, you know. He never got ahead of himself and tried to finish it off. Maybe he should have, but sometimes when you do that, you're the one that ends up getting caught and gets laid out. But one thing that I did notice that was kind of interesting on the scorecards, the scores were 97-88, which seems pretty accurate, but the 96-90 and 95-90, so you're telling me that if he didn't knock him down those five times, he would have won by 1 point, and he would have, and the other one would have been a draw, you know, if it wasn't for those five knockdowns. I didn't see that fight at all. I mean, I thought that he dominated the fight at all times, and
every time you thought Jose Felix was gonna, like, he was making a comeback, you know, it looked like he was getting his feet underneath him. It looked like he was establishing his jab. He started. I mean, he was a sharp shooter. He was shooting down the pipe. You know what I mean? He wasn't overextending his jab. He wasn't, you know, opening up to the point where he can get countered. But so every time you just thought, okay, Jose Felix is going to take control. That the other guy just came, man. He had that control violence, and he just took over every single time. And like I said, to me, that was the fight of the week for me last week. That was the fight that really stood out. I mean, I was on my feet. I was clapping. Both guys, when you talk about tooth and nail, they both were just hammering away. You know what I mean? I give it up to Felix Jr. There, at no point did you ever see him kind of surrender. I mean, there was that expression in his face, like, holy shit, is this guy going to stop? I mean, I'm hitting him with everything I got. And Marcelo just keep coming forward and throwing punches. And then I don't know about you, Felipe, but I was getting tired of watching this guy. I mean, the stamina the guy had. I mean,
yeah.
I thought at one point that because Jose Felix was throwing some good body shots, he was even throwing some low blows. He was pulling some of the tricks out of Tito Trinidad by throwing some low blows, but Marcelo just keep coming and never stopped him at any point, never stopped him in his tracks, just allowed him to keep coming forward, and obviously he got the win. He deserved it.
So who do you want to see him next? I mean, is he a player now? Is he a guy that deserves to face the top echelon of the division, you know, like a Vasyl Lomachenko or, you know, a Miguel Berchev, who just won the title of, what's that guy's name? Vargas. So is he ready for those guys, or you think he needs a couple more wins?
You know what? I would say, even though we're some thirsty goons, I would like to see him get in there with Barchet, Lomachenko's, the Salcedos of the world. But I just say, you know what, capitalize off the Jose Felix. Give him one more fight. Give him two more fights. Let's see where he goes. Obviously, they're going to probably try to keep him on Solo Boxeo on Unimas. But how much should we get out of him beating Jose Felix? What do we get? I mean, how significant was that?
Well, Jose Felix, I mean, he was a player in the division. I mean, Top Rank had promoted him quite well and developed him quite well. And I'm trying to remember who they were talking about him facing for a world title pretty soon. Do you remember? I've been trying to think about it ever since Friday. I mean, I just didn't Google it. I should have Googled it and killed my curiosity. But I remember that there was some heavy talks about having Felix fighting for a world title soon. So, you know, I think it's pretty impressive. And the way that he did it, I mean, he just didn't beat it. It wasn't a controversial decision. It wasn't a close decision. It was a mauling. I mean, the guy mauled Jose Felix, who at this point, at certain point, was, you know, one of the top prospects in the division. Still is, because he gave a good account of himself. But those five drops, those five knockdowns didn't help his cause, you know. But just looking at the title holders, you know, Miguel Berchel is holding the WBC, Jezreel Corrales from Panama, Jason Sosa, the Puerto Rican, living in New Jersey, hold the WBA, Gervonta Davis, the IBF, we forgot about all about him, and Vasyl Lomachenko. So, I mean, this guy I want to see him against any of these guys, or even some of the top guys.
I tell you what.
You know, why not Orlando Salido or a Takashi Miura? Or
Orlando Salido's not going to take that fight. I tell you that right now. I mean, he's looking at the bigger money fights. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't see that. But I tell you.
But he's with Top Rank, right, Marcelo?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a fight they can make, but they're not mentioning him. Not mentioning this kid at all.
Why would he? You know? I mean, Salido already saw Vargas, one of his money tickets there, just kind of just fizzle in his own hands in front of his eyes, right? You know, Nicholas Walters, who was completely dominated by Lomachenko. And he's talking about, if he talks about making his comeback, why make his comeback so easy? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Give him Jonathan Marcelo. I'd like to see that happen. And Walters is, I'm not sure if I might be wrong.
That you mentioned Nicholas Walters, I really like that fight because it's a development fight. You know, it's a former champion at 126 pounds, moving up at 130. He has skill. He can hit. He can punch. He knows how to box. I mean, he didn't look great against Lomachenko, but who does? And I think it's a win or die type of fight. Whoever wins moves on, and whoever loses, you know, dies on the vine. So, yeah, I really like that fight. That's the fight I want to see next.
Yeah, because, you know, Marcelo, if he just does the same thing he did to Jose Felix to Nicholas Walters, he's a major player.
Yeah.
If Walters is able to take out Marcelo in good, great fashion,
Comes back.
He just got himself. Yeah, he's on his way back. You know
he
what
gets
I mean?
Back in the
I don't
mix.
Know how
yeah.
he gets back. I don't know how much he gets back in the mix because it leaves the question that it was Marcelo ready to make that leap. You know what I mean? But
I
at least
he
gets
I mean,
some.
That guy has nearly 30 fights. He only has 2 losses. I mean, yeah, he is. I mean, this is they're at the level.
I
now
think
that
he
they
is.
Gotta win.
I think
to
he is.
Going.
Yeah, I think he is, and I think he looks the part. You know what I mean? If
mm-hmm.
anything, Lomachenko needs somebody that's just the bipolar of him. You know, where Marcelo might be that guy. I don't know. You know, he might be the guy to interrupt a rhythm the way Salido interrupted Lomachenko at one time when Loma was asking for, you know, a title fight after fifth fight?
Lomachenko is second fight. He was
yeah.
asking for a title fight. He was actually for a title fight in his first fight, and Bob Arum didn't give it to him. He said, let's wait till your second fight. And that's when he got his opportunity.
There you go. Well, I'll tell you what. Last night in Houston on Fox Sports 1, Dat Nguyen, let's talk about comebacks.
Wow.
First,
wow,
you had
that name. You must have some Vietnamese friends because you pronounced that last name perfect. Oh, my God.
Toma May. All right, buddy. How about that?
All right.
You want to talk about gatekeepers or comebacks of the year. First, you saw Luis Collazo do it against Sammy Vargas, Vasquez, Sammy Vasquez. Now you're seeing that do that. Now you get me screwed up. That new win. Yeah,
there you go.
He pulled the upset by stopping previously undefeated and high prospect from PBC, the super featherweight local Miguel Flores in the 6th round of their scheduled 10. I tell you what, this is the thing that I saw with Miguel Flores. Okay. He fell into the trap with Nguyen by trying to trade with them to try to out-muscle him, push Nguyen back. He fell into his trap, and it played out better for Dat. Good for you. I like to see guys that create the upset and work for that upset. It just didn't fall on their lap. They really did. I mean, Dat Nguyen went out there. He did his job. He behaved like the gatekeeper that was not going to give away the key so easily to the prospect featherweight. He welcomed the fight, and you saw his face marked up. It wasn't like Miguel Flores wasn't touching the kid's face. You know what I mean? It wasn't like he wasn't landing good, solid shots. But it was the fact that he got a new win that could take a shot and deliver back. He was punching with Miguel Flores, got him on those ropes, and that's another thing. Miguel Flores and his team need to go back and watch the tape. His back was far too much on those ropes, Felipe, just way too much. He needed to be off of those ropes, and it spelled disaster when I saw him go back 3 or 4 times. When it was really easy for Dat Nguyen to push him back. I mean, really didn't push him back. He walked him back to those ring ropes. And that's where all the touching of Nguyen was able to do to Flores. And we saw the result. 6 rounds, it was stopped, halted, and Dat Nguyen's hand was risen as the winner.
Well, that's
simple as that.
You know, I think that you described it perfectly when you said that Dat Nguyen did what he needed to do as the gatekeeper. I mean, Dat Nguyen has 3 losses. He's 20 wins, 3 losses, 7 knockouts. He's 34 years old. And his losses have come to guys that – well, his first loss really didn't come to a guy that was kind of – his first loss was to a guy named Gregorio Torres. But his last 2 fights were to Luis Orlando del Valle in 2011 and Jason Velez in 2013. 2 guys that – At one point in their careers, they were being considered, you know, contenders. You know,
right.
They were on the fast track or one kind of a track to a world title. Obviously, you know, they didn't make it. I don't think neither one of them have been world champions, but they got in close. I know Jason Velez has challenged for a title, But they lost to Danny Huguen. So, I mean, they beat Danny Huguen, so they were able to move to the next level, you know, and that's what Danny Huguen is. If you beat this guy who's tough, who knows how to fight, but obviously he's not a elite level type of guy, but if you beat him, you move on to the next level, it shows what you have. And Miguel Flores at this point with 21 wins, 0 losses before he stepped into that ring, did not show that he was ready for that next level. It's like Donkey Kong, you know? You go up the Donkey Kong levels, and if you get past that fire and those barrels, you're going to move on to the next level, and finally you get to King Kong, Donkey Kong at the top level. Same thing. I'm using your kind of analogy, you know, but it's the same thing. You got to get up those levels, and Danny Huguen is one of those levels. Luis Collazo is one of those levels. Adrian Granados is one of those levels. You get past those guys, you get to the next level, and you get to Donkey Kong, you get that belt around your waist.
Absolutely. Can't wait to see what they're going to do with that Nguyen. Obviously, he was not the guy that was marked to win that night last night in Houston on Fox Sports 1. They were hoping that Miguel Flores was going to get a recognizable name underneath his belt, but that's not the case. Miguel Flores has got to go back to the drawing board, figure out what he did wrong. Hopefully, they can spot it, look at it, what we saw happen last night with him, and hopefully that Nguyen gets another fight offered to him that can help him out, put him back into the mix.
Yeah,
in the ring of mix of the names out there. Hey, Prospect Watch here. Let's ask you about Felipe Pedro Campa.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned a little while ago when you were talking about Jonathan Maicelo that he looked the part. And, you know, being in Mexico and like the caller, that, the first caller that we had, you know, a lot of people sometimes ask me, you know, who do you see as the next good prospect coming out of Mexico? And it's kind of sometimes hard to answer that because in the last 4 or 5 years, to be quite honest, I haven't really seen anybody that I would say, wow, I'm really hype on this guy. But there's this guy who just fought this last Saturday night. His name is Pedro La Roca Campa. He's from Hermosillo, Sonora. He's 25-0 with 19 knockouts, and this guy looks like the real deal. He hits hard. I mean, obviously a little rugged, a little bit raw, but he hits hard. And in the last 5 fights, they really have known to match him correctly to get that experience and to get those wins. He beat this gentleman from Mexico as well. His name is Aaron Herrera, La Joya Herrera. He beat him, and that was a good fight for him. He beat Jose Alfaro, the former lightweight champion. He beat him, but experienced fighter. And then he just beat, in this last Saturday night in Guaymas, which is near his home, he beat Marvin Quintero, a fighter who is originally from Culiacan, but lives here in Tijuana. And if you ever guys seen this fight, Marvin Quintero, he's a southpaw. He's very skilled, very athletic, has run into a little bit of bad luck in his career, but he's a good test. He's a good fighter. And Campa just laid him out in the fourth round, completely laid him out. So, yeah, Quintero was fighting out of his weight class, usually 135-pounder. They were fighting at 140. But Campa, you know, he wasn't intimidated. He was ready for the fight. He moved right through him. I thought it was going to be a more competitive fight, but it wasn't. So if you guys want to watch somebody, kind of keep an eye on somebody, keep an eye on this kid, Pedro Campa, 25 years old, 25-0, 19 knockouts.
There you go. On the prospect watch there. Hey, let's patch in a fight fan really quick before we continue on our second topic here. Let's patch in area code 510. You're on live right now. Leaving the ring. What's on your mind? 510, you out there, brother? No, we are dropped the way Marcelo dropped Jose Felix Jr.
There you
okay,
go.
Okay, Felipe, let's go on the second
all
topic
right
here, my man.
The biggest news this week was the launch of the 4-City Press Tour to officially announce and promote the May 6th mega fight between Saúl Canelo Álvarez and Julio César Chávez Jr. at a catch weight of 164.5 pounds. It began in Mexico City on Monday, then it moved on to New York City on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, they were just doing some press in Miami. They didn't actually have a press conference open to the public, but tomorrow on Thursday, they will be in Houston, Texas, and then Friday, they're going to finish it off in Los Angeles. During the stop today in Miami, during an early morning popular Spanish language morning show, it got a little heated, and Saúl Canelo Álvarez and Chávez Jr. actually bet their purse. They shook hands and everything, and they bet their purse on the fight, on the winner of the fight. So we got a little bit more. Well, that's what they said in front of the cameras,
right.
But then I saw an interview after the cameras were off where Canelo Alvarez said, well, you know, during the bet, he said, both the purses, I'll give you the advantage because I'm going to make about four times what you're going to make. But then after the cameras were off and he was being interviewed by Chava Rodriguez, who is like the Dan Rafael of ESPN Deportes in Spanish. He's like the main boxing writer. He interviewed him and he put out the video. He said, no, well, we're going to bet his purse because I'm not going to give him the advantage of making as much as I'm going to make. So we're going to bet his $6 million purse. So there's a little bit of backtracking there from Canelo Alvarez. On related news, the pre-sale tickets went on sale on Saturday and it was reported that 4,500 were sold. And then this past Monday, the general public were allowed to buy tickets. And now it's saying that the event is sold out. But, like, you guys had the gentleman from the ticket broker. I forgot his name. He said my name. Jim Boone on Monday. And he kind of gave the impression that they will be releasing some tickets later on closer to the event. That's kind of like what he said, right?
Yes. I think it's hilarious about that whole bet thing. I saw that on Twitter and I retweeted it with you. I tagged you on it and stuff. And right away I was like, look at these Kardashians here. And on our Leave It A Ring Gmail, here's the thing is that a lot of our listeners, man, they're brutal. Okay. And I had a few were asking me about the weight. You know, they were saying 164.5, you know, pounds, and it's at that catch weight. Do you think it's fair that, you know, for Julio? And I'm like, wait a minute. Both of these guys are catch weight kings. Both of these guys have manipulated their opponents to either drop weight or jump up in weight, you know? So do I have any sympathy for either one of these guys, Felipe? Should I have sympathy for any of these guys of whatever? I mean, obviously Canelo's going up to the heaviest he's going to, you know, try to fight, right, at 164.5, even though he walks into the ring at 170, 175. And then Julio's got to drain himself to make 164.5, but he's made smaller guys jump up to face him as well. So
who? Both of them. Both of them have done
both
it.
Of them. Yeah, both of them. So,
but listen, David, listen, come on. Listen, this is boxing. This is boxing. This is the way you build a
this
fighter.
This is absolutely, yeah. Hey, Manny Pacquiao, Manny Pacquiao made a name off of making guys, you know, fighting guys at a catch weight.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so we know that the way you build a fighter, you bring guys up. You bring guys up from a lighter weight class. Maybe he has a little bit more experience than you. Maybe he's like a little bit of an over the hill ex world champion at a lower weight class. You bring him up. You fight him at your weight class for your prospect. Your prospect wins. He keeps moving on forward, right? So that's
right.
The way we know it. And this is, and we've both seen him do this. Okay, we've seen Saul Canelo Alvarez do it. We've seen Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. do it. But is it the same when the catch weight is being used to fight for a world title? Like at 155 pounds for the middleweight title, is it the same thing?
I don't understand. What do you mean? Is it the same thing?
Is it the same? Do you give it the same connotation that you're having guys come up and fighting at catch weight? Is it the same as when you fight for a world title at less than the limit of the world title? And I'm not just saying Canelo has done it, because obviously Miguel Cotto has done it too, you know. So
everybody's done it. I mean, there's no question. That's what I'm saying.
For a world title, though, and call yourself the champion of the division when you won the title at a catch weight.
Canelo's been doing it for quite some time. I mean, Manny Pacquiao did it.
Well, yeah, that's another one.
That's what I'm saying. Why should we have sympathy for this weight? Because the fact is this, man, is that a lot of these fighters have been building their records off of making guys either move up or come down. There's only been a few guys that have said, hey, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to try to fight at my weight and fight you at the weight that is scheduled, and that's going to make me the true champion. I mean, here's the crazy part. Sergio Martinez, which gets bagged on a lot by fight fans, when the guy was fighting for the title, he had to either jump up or come down. When he fought Paul Williams twice, he had to come down in weight for 160. He had to literally put his title on the line when he was the champion by coming down because he wasn't the marquee guy. So this is nothing new, and I know people are upset about this whole weight issue, but...
Well, I mean, it's nothing new in boxing either. I mean, you can see throughout history that they have gone up and had catch weights to make these kind of fights, you know? So
absolutely.
So it's nothing new in the world of boxing.
It's never going to be new when you got the Kardashians of boxing, because the fact that they have more pull than anybody else. You know, Canelo has the bigger following. He's got the power. He's got the guys behind him with the power to. I think your dog agrees with me. To set in stone where he wants to fight. Where Julio had that as well, but he didn't have the leverage this time. His dad wasn't able to save him with this weight, this whole weight issue. So,
but I think this is what, I mean, especially this year, 2017, where. You know, we've all talked about it on a different podcast, where 2016 wasn't the year that we all thought it could be, and now we got 2017, and we're starting up, we're revving up the engines really, really well, and we're moving forward, and we got some great fights in the distance, we got some great, and on the horizon, we got some great fights in the rearview mirror, and this is a fight that boxing needs at this moment. I mean, yeah, the 164 pounds, but I mean, you got a press tour. You got these guys, you know, betting their purses on live TV.
Genuine dislike, right? There's some genuine dislike between the two.
You got the biggest. You got, I mean, without Floyd Mayweather, with Floyd Mayweather being retired and Manny Pacquiao, you know, not being the guy that he is, you got quite possibly, arguably, the biggest star in boxing. In the red corner, you got the son of a legend in the blue corner. Both of them have big Mexican followings. You know, it's going to be in Vegas. It's going to be on pay-per-view. The tickets are sold out. I mean, this is a fight that we need in 2017 to keep moving forward. I mean, yeah,
you know,
is it perfect? No, it's not perfect.
No,
it's not a perfect fight.
I'm going to tell you this.
What happens on May 6th.
Well, yeah. We're definitely going to see what's going to happen on May 6th. But I tell you this, of what we've gotten for these first 2 months and what we're going to get on Boxing March Madness, you know, everybody's calling this everybody's calling the Julio Cesar Chavez and Canelo fight a joke. Hey, out of everything else right now, what was going on in boxing for 2017, which looks great, it's on a grand stage. It looks fantastic. I'll take one joke fight out of everything.
Hey, how much
fine
of a joke? I mean, how much of a joke fight can it be? I mean, yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, 164 and 5 pounds. Chavez Jr. coming back. You know, he looked good in his comeback, but, you know, the whole thing.
I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, we don't
gotta
go over.
Right.
We don't have to go over the whole Chavez Jr. and his whole discipline and non-discipline and all that. We all know the story. And we know the story of Canelo Alvarez with the catch weight and him vacating the title and all that. We all know that story, okay? Like we said, the fight's not perfect. But you're going to tell me that come May 6th, around 7:30 to 8 p.m. Pacific time from Las Vegas, Nevada, we're not going to see two guys in the middle of a ring trying to beat the living, and I want to say a bad word here, kids, cover your ears, living shit out of each other? You know? We're going to see that on May 6th. You know, there's not going to be a guy running around the perimeter of the ring. We're not going to see a guy holding on to dear life because there's a guy from Chicago all over him and he's using his forearm to keep him off him. You know, you're going to have two guys trying to land the hardest punches they can muster against his opponent. And that's a fight. Whether it's a joke fight, whatever, that's a fight, and that's what we're going to see.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, like I said, I'm not completely upset about the catch weight. Because you got to be numb to it.
Well, without the catch weight, we don't have a fight.
No, so we don't have a
fight. So it comes with the baggage. It comes with the whole Chavez Jr. baggage. It comes with the whole Canelo baggage. Without the catch weight, we don't have a fight.
You don't have a fight, and then you would have got Canelo fighting somebody smaller that nobody wants to see, and Julio Cesar Chavez doing the same thing. So I'm going to accept this one. I like this fight. I've said it from the beginning. I do like this fight. I think there's going to be some fireworks. But I tell you what I don't like is how the undercard is starting to form. You know, Orlando Salido is going to be on there, but they really don't have anybody of significance to face him.
I heard a rumor. I don't know. I'm not sure how valid this rumor is, but I heard a rumor: Orlando Salido against Miguel Mickey Roman. I mean, do you really want to see that on a pay-per-view?
No, not really.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather see Saddam that on
Ali,
HBO.
Saddam Ali, you know, and then Lucas Matisse in his comeback fight, which you know is not going to be against somebody.
No.
Ultra competitive. So.
No, exactly. That should be on ESPN. That's Lucas Matisse should be on ESPN.
Hmm.
Friday Night Fights back on there. Rebuild himself. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
Saddam Ali, okay, but to me, Ali, I got to see it with somebody worthy.
I would want to see Saddam Ali, he's a welterweight though. You know, let's say for instance that obviously Golden Boy has to look at the purse and they have a budget. And usually when we have these mega fights where these guys are making a ton of money and they want to get the lion's share of the event, we know that, okay? The people that know boxing and they know boxing is a business and they know the business of boxing, they know that when we have these big, major, mega fights, like Bob Arum says, you know, the main event sells itself. You don't need to put on great stuff on the undercard. You know, that's why we got Butterbean and we got these other fights back in the day. But why not put on some prospects or some up-and-coming contenders against other, like, in good test fights. You know, a Diego de la Hoya in a good test fight, an Antonio Orozco in a good test fight. You know, instead of, you know, Lucas Matisse's comeback fight or Orlando Salido or whatever the case may be. You know,
why don't they do what they used to do back in the days? You know, you had two prospects, and then you had three championship fights, you know? There was three championship fights, things that really mattered. I don't know. I mean.
Well, that's a little big because, you know, like I mentioned, the main event is an expensive
right.
main event. But
well,
like,
yeah,
you know,
because,
why
yeah,
not,
no, I agree.
Why not a Diego de la Hoya against a good test to see if he moves on to the next level? You know, it doesn't have to be a world title or anything like that. Just a good test, something that's going to, you know, get us hyped up, or maybe Jojo Diaz in a good test as well. You know,
those two guys should be on the pay-per-view for more exposure. Most definitely. That's
exactly.
Where they're dropping the ball. I don't know what they're planning with, but definitely dropping the ball on that. Hey, you know, New York Presser interviewed Canelo, and he had stated that he would vacate the WBO title after the Chavez Jr. fight and that he would go after a middleweight title fight against Triple G.
Well,
how much closer do you think that's going to happen?
Well, he didn't say that. He said that after this fight against Chavez Jr., he's going to vacate the super welterweight title, the WBO, and he's going to now fight at
middleweight, right.
At middleweight. So does that get us closer to a Triple G fight? I mean, obviously
no.
It gets us closer, but does it get us closer in September? Is September the Triple G fight?
I don't think it gets as close to anything because, you know, it's with Triple G right now, with talking about Danny Jacobs, he's got that's an order he's got to fill in, right? And then they're talking about BJ Saunders possibly after that. So I think Canelo is well aware of how they've kind of set themselves up to avoid a Triple G fight for this year. I think it's kind of safe to say that this is not going to happen. They're gonna weigh it out to next year. 2018 is probably going to be closer, you know.
Yeah, I think May or even September 2018, if we ever see that fight, it's going to happen there. I think I agree with you. I think that if Canelo does want to fight at middleweight, you know, generally fight at that weight class and come in at 160 pounds, you know, obviously he wants to get in some fights beforehand. I mean, I wouldn't even, you know, criticize him if his first fight at middleweight was against David Lemieux. I've been dying to see that fight. I want to see Saúl Canelo Álvarez at middleweight against David Lemieux. That, if I see that fight in September and it's not Canelo, I wouldn't hate it.
Well, I like to see him get whoever the winner is for Lemieux and Stevenson. That's, woo.
That'll be something. That in 2017, I think my head's going to explode because this year has turned out to be, you know, one hell of a year. But let's move on. And, you know, I hate to, you know, I don't know. I'm not even going to say it, but this is a horrible segue. But in tragic news, Ricardo Pelón Domínguez, a Mexican fighter who many of you might have seen, he's fought in the United States a lot of times, tragically died of colon cancer yesterday. He had been fighting the disease for 3 years. The two-time world title challenger Domínguez was best known for winning a contender type of show in Mexico called the Campeón Azteca. He made his professional debut in March 2nd, 2001 against Eduardo Castillo, and his last fight was March 22nd, 2014 against Abner López. His professional record stands at 37 wins, 11 losses, 1 draw with 22 knockouts. Julio César Chávez Sr. and Julio César Chávez Jr., being that Pelón Domínguez was from Culiacán, supported Domínguez financially so that Ricardo could afford his treatment and focus exclusively in his battle against cancer. So with that said, rest in peace, Ricardo Pelón Domínguez. I did have the chance to see him fight here in Tijuana. And, you know, his record, at the later half of his career, he was an opponent. But one thing that you can never deny of the guy, he never lacked heart, and he proved it in his fight against cancer, 3 years fighting it. You know, I know what that – I mean, I've never had cancer myself, but I know how hard it is to battle it. People close to me, my mother passed away from cancer, so I've seen it firsthand, in my home every day, and I know how tough it is. So you know, rest in peace, and hopefully his family finds quick resolution to this tragic news.
Absolutely. Rest in peace, Ricardo. Hall of Famer – promoter Bob Arum has dismissed reports that Manny Pacquiao's next fight will be in England against Amir Khan. Funny thing is, though, even after this is Bob Arum's quote, Amir Khan's story has come out of nowhere. It's a total and complete bullshit.
That's a pretty good Bob Arum. I want to see you and Kim have an Arum off one of these days, you know?
Oh, Kim. Enough of those Zimas. But here's the thing is that Manny tweets out that his team is in negotiations with Amir Khan. So somebody's not talking
there?
To somebody.
What's going on over
you know
there?
What I mean?
And Bob Arum said, you know, that the fight against Jeff Horn in Australia is still up in the air. So what is going on at Team Pacquiao? I mean, you got Pacquiao, you got Boo Boy, you got Bob Arum, you got Michael Kahn. They're all throwing in their 2 cents on who Manny Pacquiao should fight next. So, who? There's too many Chiefs and not enough Indians over there.
Absolutely. Michael Kahn, I tell you what, he's always been in Manny Pacquiao's ear. If anything, that's the trustest guy that Manny looks at. And I think that it's really, this is my theory, is that I think Bob Arum and Michael Kotz no longer are seeing eye to eye ever since the Bradley fight. I think that's what's kind of set it off between those two. You know? So doesn't look like he's talking that the people in Dubai, you know, have offered him an insane amount of money, whether the offer is real or not. Bob is saying he's determined to explore it to see if there's any valid, you know, if it's valid. That's all he could say. But Manny Pacquiao seems to be doing his own negotiations, though.
Well, why would you think that Arum doesn't jump on that Amir Khan train? I mean, if that's a legitimate offer and that's a legitimate fight for May 20th, but we've seen
that's what kills it.
No. We've seen Amir Khan negotiate his own fights. He practically negotiated his own fight to fight Canelo, you know? So, you know, why wouldn't he negotiate his own fight to fight Manny Pacquiao, and why wouldn't Bob Arum jump on that bandwagon
if it is a legitimate offer to fight him. You know, the one thing that just popped into my mind is that they're saying May 20th as a date. And obviously they can't have that as HBO pay-per-view because HBO is not going to have two pay-per-views in the same month.
No.
You know? So I don't know. I mean, I kind of would wish to get to the bottom of that.
Yes. Somebody is not being informed. Somebody's being told something different. And this is obviously a case of Bob Arum not communicating with his fighter and that and their team, the fighter's team, you know. So that being said, it is no secret that Andre Ward, the unified WA, WBO, and IBF 175-pound champ, has stated if his terms are not met for his return bout with Sergey Kovalev, he would rather retire despite signing a rematch clause. They expected his trainer, Virgil Hunter, has come out to defend his, stating the media and HBO had painted Ward to be in bad light. Hunter also explained his fighter has options for after boxing. What options? What, he's going to be a priest?
Broadcasting.
Oh, God.
I guess he went over to England, and he was part of a broadcast team over there. And according to Mr. Virgil Hunter, he did pretty well. And, you know, Virgil Hunter, obviously the father figure and obviously always in the corner of Andre Ward, came out in his defense and said that the media, you know, that the media never gave him the chance to explain what had happened between Goosen and Andre Ward in that whole court case that they had. That
he's so full of it.
Sat,
no, come
pretty
on.
Pretty much sat down Ward, that they never gave him the chance for Andre Ward to explain himself. And now HBO forced Andre Ward to face Sergey Kovalev so that hopefully Sergey Kovalev would beat him and then he would be the new star. But the things didn't turn out how HBO wanted. So now they're not letting him broadcast anymore. They're not asking him to work with them anymore. That's what Virgil Hunter said. That's not what I'm saying. But
right.
That's what he said. Well, that's what he said in this interview. So I don't know. I mean, the only thing – One thing that Virgil Hunter did say that kind of made sense to me, he said, you know, everybody wants to be a judge. You know, all these media people want to be a judge and all these TV people want to be judged. But we actually have three judges sitting ringside that are judges, and they judge Andre Ward beating Sergey Kovalev. So it is what it is, you know. And he technically has a point.
Well, if it had swayed the other way, his tune would be completely different. But, I mean, he's going to say that, right? Why wouldn't
mm-hmm.
he say
well, yeah,
that? But anyway,
course, but,
so, I mean, listen,
he,
I mean,
he does have
hey,
a
Ward,
little bit of point.
Look, Ward, okay, if you want to sail out in the sunset of being a commentator in England, go right ahead. I don't think anybody here is going to miss you, man, tell you the truth, you know.
Yeah, he
Strong
had
Ward, I mean, the rematch clause is ridiculous. You know, this is a fight that everybody – a rematch is what we want to see.
Yeah,
you're
yeah,
still in your
him,
prime.
Yeah,
you're still in yeah. your prime. You know? All right, before we go into the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the biggest douchebag of the boxing week, let's patch in another fight fan really quick, and then we'll give our prediction. I think everybody knows our prediction about Wilder and Washington. We've talked
about it.
I'll
tell you what I think. I think once we get there, I'll tell you what I think is going to be the most competitive fight of the weekend, but go ahead.
Okay, let's go. Area code 301, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 301, you there? We got some shy callers here tonight, man. Okay,
yeah.
let me tell me what's the most competitive of the week, bro. What do you got?
Well, we got Deontay Wilder against Gerald Washington, and that Gerald Washington is the late sub after I forgot the Polish dude's name that fell off because he came up positive. Obviously, we all know, we talked about it in the last couple of shows, that we don't feel that Gerald Washington is going to be any competitor. He's going to get knocked out in how many rounds? Six?
I think that's what most folks are saying, six. I don't know, man. I got to tell you, I think it's four. I mean, the thing is this, is that and I've had a few people that know Washington hit me up and go, you guys are calling this completely wrong. He's big. He's strong. He's Mexican. He's got a Mexican heart, and
half
I'm
Mexican.
Like, yeah, but he's half Mexican, and But that heart don't win fights, and we all know that, especially in this sport.
Well, I mean, you know, heart doesn't win fights. Come on.
No, what I mean, you know what I mean. You know what I mean?
I don't know what you mean.
You can't just have a heart. You gotta have skill behind it, too.
Yeah,
okay?
I agree.
You know? I mean, a heart's going to make you, if you get knocked down, a heart will make you get back up. You know? That doesn't win fights, though. You got to have something else of substance behind the heart. You got to have some skills. And that's something that Washington, I mean, look, he's got semi-skills, but is it to the point where it can be championship level to be competitive against Deontay Wilder? I mean, Deontay Wilder could be the argument that, yeah, he's not the best heavyweight champion we've seen. You know, he's no Lennox Lewis. Mm-hmm. He's no Mike Tyson. He's definitely no Holyfield. He's not even a Tommy the Duke Morrison. He's none of those guys. But he's worked his way into the level of being competitive. That we could say. Do both guys have excellent balance? No. But one guy's got a sleeper in the right hand, and that's Wilder. And you know what? He's not gun-shy with it, Felipe. This guy, you know, doesn't lock and load. He just unloads when he sees it. You know what I mean? And
I think this fight's going to last It all depends on Wilder. It depends. I mean, this is his first fight after that hand injury and that bicep injury. You know, so it's going to last depending how good Wilder's coming back from those two injuries. You know, if he's coming back and he's, like, strong and he's at 100% and there's not much ring rust, I agree with you. Four rounds and he's done. But if he's a little hesitant because of the right hand being hurt or that bicep and you know, a little bit of ring rust there, then it's going to go a little bit longer. I think it's going to go 6, 7, 8 rounds.
Well, ring rust or hand hurt, I still think that he's off night or not, he definitely has more of the skills to defeat a Gerald Washington. I hope I eat crow because I'm actually pulling for Washington. I don't know about you, but I'm pulling for the underdog kid. You know,
no.
I like Washington. I've seen him fight. I know about him. I've been following him for quite some time. Dominic Brazil is on the undercard. I've been watching that kid too. But they're both similar,
mm-hmm.
very similar.
I think Dominic Brazil has more skill.
I think so too. I was about to say that. Yeah.
And look, you know, really, Dominic Brazil. I mean, is he a world champion at one point?
Hey, no. I tell you what, the only reason why even like Dominic Brazil and Gerald Washington got past Amir Mansour is because of the height. And that was a problem for the shorter guy. Whereas right now, Gerald Washington, he's gonna have problems with a guy that he's gonna be able to see eye level with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see him. Like I said on the next round. Unless some miracle happens where Washington develops this, like, stiff Lennox Lewis jab and then a right cross that comes out of way to Mexico, then he's got something. But I don't see that happening.
No. On the semi-main of that, we got Gerald Hurd fighting Tony Harrison for the IBF vacant super welterweight title. That's the title that Jermall, M-A-A-L-L, Charlo, left vacant to move up to the middleweight division. I think Hurd wins that fight. Not sure if it's by knockout or decision, but I think he's going to take that. But the fight that I think is going to be the most competitive of the weekend is out in Yorkshire, United Kingdom in England. It's going to be for the vacant WBC super bantamweight title between Gavin McDonald and Mexican Ray Vargas. Ray Vargas is a tall, lanky Mexican fighter from Mexico City who is trained by the legendary Nacho Berenstain. And they're going out there to win. You know, I think he has like 25 wins, 22 knockouts. So he's a very hard puncher. McDonald has, you know, I think he has like 13, 14 wins and about 7 knockouts. So he doesn't have a lot of punching power. He is going to be fighting at home. But I think that Vargas with his power and with Mr. Betty Stein in his corner, is going to be able to pull it off. And I think he's going to give Mr. Nacho Bernstein yet another world champion to add on to the 30 that he has made already throughout his illustrious career.
Yeah, I want to see that too as well. We got like 30 minutes left here on Leaving the Ring, so we got to move on pretty quick here. I think it's time for us to do the good, the bad, and the ugly, Felipe. What do you think?
All righty.
All right.
You want to...
The good. The bad. The ugly.
Well, I think we already know who's the ugly out of the two of us. It's Felipe. I'm the prettier one out of Leaving the Ring podcast here. Hey,
good
the good for this week air on Leaving the Ring. Lamont Peterson's performance this past Saturday night, you got to say, that was the good of the week. You know, I think honorable mention Jonathan Marcelo. I think that's
Marcelo,
the honorable mention for the good. Marcelo. Yeah.
Strong second there.
Yep. Now, what do you got for the bad?
The bad, the referee, Ernie Sharif, who usually is a pretty good referee in the Broner versus Granados fight, allowing Broner to hold extensively and to use his forearm and push off, like the caller earlier said from, I forgot his name, but I know he's from Winston-Salem.
Joe.
It wasn't Joe. It was the other guy.
Matt.
Yeah, Matt. He mentioned that, you know, Broner was using his distance, and that was a complaint that a lot of people had in social media and in podcasts and all that, that the referee did a horrible job. But this guy, he actually...
Hometown cooking, man.
He actually does a pretty good job sometimes, but not this past Saturday night. And then, obviously, to go with the name, you're going to go with the ugly. Go ahead, David.
Broner going life and death with the Granados. I mean, Jesus. We knew that, you know, we knew he couldn't make the weight. We knew that that was going to be an issue. We knew that him saying that I'm now focused and disciplined, that was all just for say, all for show. Going in there, he should have been able to use his hands and his because he's far more than much talented guy, more talented guy than Granados. That has been established for a long time from some folks, fight fans, you know, like, hey, well, Broner's the more talented guy. He should be, you know, should be able to pot shot, counter, because he's been the guy that, you know, if anything, he's mimicked Floyd Mayweather. But that wasn't the case. Granados was able to close distances anytime he felt like it. It wasn't like he struggled to close that distance to get in the pocket with Broner and made the fight a lot closer. Some people swayed for Granados saying that he won. Some folks, and I think even Steve Kidd said this on the next round, they would have been happy with a draw. So that's the ugly for Broner, because it leaves Broner now as the suspect at the 147 division. He's a suspect. We don't know how well he's going to do with the other 147 guys that are in the top five or top 10.
Yeah, I agree with you on the suspect part. You know, if you want to, I like Broner. I like his style. I like the way he fights. I like his persona. I think it's hilarious. Every time I see that video where he's at the Walmart and he throws a change, I love it. I love that video. I like it, you know. So if you want to give the guy a benefit of the doubt, he hadn't fought since April of last year. Obviously, there's a little rust there and everything. And then the whole issue with the weight and all that. I mean, if you want to play devil's advocate and give him the benefit of the doubt, you can, you know. But obviously, in his next fight, he has to be a completely different Broner. He has to prove that he belongs in the welterweight division, or even if he belongs in boxing, in general. So I'm gonna give him one more fight because I like him. I like AB.
We don't have a choice. We're gonna have to give him one more fight. So, you know. Anyways, hey, really quick. We're now going to do our deuce bag of the week of boxing here. We got two names. Two names right now. We got, again, Angel Garcia. This guy just can't seem to get himself out of the limelight of talking out of his ass. I thought Donald Trump was bad. This guy is a running candidate next to Donald Trump. The only difference is Donald Trump is ruining a lot of people's lives, and he is an asshole, the jerk. Mm. But anyways, that Canelo Alvarez is the other guy. Honorable mention here. Not honorable mention. I'm sorry. I mean, he's the other guy that I have. He's honorable.
No,
yeah.
He gets dishonorable. Yeah.
Dishonorable mention. Guy makes a bet. And then later, I didn't mean my purse. Why would I give my purse up? Let's bet his purse.
Exactly. Like, I'm not gonna give. I'm making $220. Let's just bet his purse but in the actual broadcast, he did say both purses.
Yeah, in the actual broadcast. On the morning show, he did say both purses, but after he got out, it's just almost the same thing, there's an old saying in Mexico, we don't fuck around, but then you do after, you know. Mm. You even told Triple G when he stepped in the ring, we could do it right now, put the gloves back on, just like how you said on the tweet. Yeah, it's almost the same as let's put the gloves on right now.
Yeah, that's
how much,
why when
how much water does that weigh?
Yeah, that's why when I saw that, I'm like, they're not gonna bet, or it's not gonna be the straight bet that they mentioned on the broadcast, so. You know, it is what it is. I mean, it's pumping up the fight. A lot of people have been saying that it's been very dull. You know, that neither one of them have a lot of personality, which is honestly the case. You know, so you know they needed to do something to get people talking, and this was it because people are talking about it. People are you know sharing the video and they're already coming out with memes on it and stuff like that. I just saw one where they're saying, oh, we bet our purses. And then there's one, I'll send it to you, David. There's one with Canelo holding some kind of woman's purse and then Chavez Jr. holding a bag of weed. So those were the purses that they ended up betting. So it's getting people to talk about the fight and about the press tour. So it's doing its job.
Well, you know, going back with the biggest douchebag here, which we will announce who is the winner. Is it going to be Angel Garcia or Canelo Alvarez? Angel Garcia, if you guys don't know what's been going on with this guy here, you need to come out of the shed because this dude went, there's no such thing as full racist. Either you're a racist or you're not. And this guy starts taking shots about people that weren't even there. They're not even involved in the sport of boxing. It has nothing to do. I mean, if you're an Asian person sitting at home, and you're a fight fan, you're like, what the fuck did I do to this guy for him to start talking shit about me? So, hey, I think the anticipation's long enough here. Let's announce who is the guy. Biggest douchebag again. You landed this award, what, twice? Twice since we had this segment here?
I think it's a hat trick. I think it's been like three times.
I love that song.
It is a good song. That's like the only country song I like.
You're an asshole.
Hey,
for life.
David, you being Mexican, if you walk into a bar and they're playing country music, what do?
I start dancing.
No, I walk out because that ain't gonna turn out.
Well, you're from Southern California, though. You're from Southern California. I'm over from Northern California, bro.
Brother, huh?
Yeah, you know, I mean, my wife is from Hollister, which is it's farm country. I live in Modesto, farm country. We got dairy places
here,
all over the spot.
Here in Southern California, you walk into a bar with country music and you're Mexican, you walk out because that ain't gonna end. That ain't gonna end right for you. Hey, you know another thing. What? It just reminded me on the next round, the Puerto Rican writer who called in and you guys had a really good interview.
Jose
with him
Sanchez, about, Joe Sanchez.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, he confused it with Gabriel, so that kind of proved to me that, you know, to Puerto Ricans, all Mexicans look the same because he didn't know if you were David or Gabriel.
Oh, you know what? You deserve. That's right, Felipe. Honorable mention, Felipe. Take the ring, take it.
Were you born an asshole? Or did you work it your whole life?
He sure did, I tell you that.
Either way, it worked out fine. Cause you're an asshole.
Yeah.
there you go, folks. Here on Leaving the Ring, we're at the last minutes of the show. I want to thank everybody that has pledged with us on Patreon. If you haven't done so yet, hey, do it. We got other shows that we're developing and should be on pretty soon. Hopefully we got Around the Ring at the end of the month. If not, it'd be in the beginning of the month. Like I said, I have to set everything up, make sure everybody's on the same page so we can record the show. But we got the Boxing Spotlight. I'm not very fond of that name. I think I put that on Patreon on the description. They're not very fond of names. So if you guys can come up with something better, we'll go with that. But as right now, it's just the Boxing Spotlight. It's going to be a YouTube series as well before it goes on podcast. So anyways, every Monday night you got the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. Gabriel will be coming back in March. I'll be his replacement. I'm the pitch hitter for Steve Kim. And then every Wednesday, well, you got Leave It in the Ring, the flagship of all boxing podcasts. Then every Thursday night, you got the two-minute round.
Every other Thursday night.
Yeah.
Every other Thursday bi-monthly, we're going to be having the two-minute round, your Hooks and Jabs look at the female fight world, and our next show is next Thursday, where we're going to be previewing the big fight coming up on March 10th on Showbox. First time a female fight will headline a Showbox broadcast between two-time Olympian gold medal Clarissa Shields and Silvia Zavados for the middleweight NABF title. We'll be talking about that. On next Thursday at the two-minute round. You're a female.
Would you be talking about that? Will you be talking about that?
We'll be talking
about
that.
Sure.
I just want
to make sure.
Hey, guys. You guys should call. I'm going to make a petition to all our loyal Leave It in the Ring fight fans. It gets lonely on the two-minute round. We got David Avila, Southern California veteran writer. He writes for the Rear Riverside Press Journal or something like that. We have former fighter Elena Baby Doll Reed out of Phoenix. And then you have yours truly, Felipe Leon, the Juan Cafe of boxing podcaster.
Hardest boxing podcaster.
it gets lonely. We need some guys to call in, some women to call in. Just let us know that somebody's out there, you know. The one time some guy called in, he wanted to talk about MMA. He said, I just came across it on Blog Talk. I don't know what you guys are talking about. He wanted to talk about MMA. We know nothing about MMA. Actually, Elena Baby Doll Reed fought MMA after her boxing career. But, you know, if you guys want to throw us a bone and kind of listen for the first 10, 15 minutes, we had some great guests. I mean, we had some big.
You guys have had some really good guests. Right.
We had Christy Martin on there. I mean, she's a Hall of Famer. We had Christy Martin on there. We had Jelena Miranovic, a big-time,
I'm getting the sense right now, Felipe. Should I bring you some tissue?
We've had Amanda Serrano on there who fought on Showtime last month. We're trying to get Clarissa Shields. Throw us a bone. Give us a call. Let us know you guys are out there. We know you guys are listening. I see the numbers on the Blog Talk, but that's just my little petition to all our faithful listeners.
I know. Somebody please call in and give them the Mindana hump. Felipe is lonely. He needs that. But it's a really good show, though. I got to tell you that. Tuned in plenty of times. I've even called in myself. Really good show. You know, but we're at that last minute here on Leaving the Ring. Again, everybody, have a great weekend. Enjoy the fights. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Hey,
ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros.